Do Your Duty, Little Sparrow. Written by Rainy Lemons and read by Eos Rose. It had been raining then, too. In the days before one of his sisters had come to leave him in ruin, in the days when Castiel could look on him without guilt, it had been raining. He's not sure how it had begun, not sure how it was that he'd been sitting in a chair soaked to his bones one moment, and then... It was a few hours of peace in a time when such moments were stolen rather than borrowed. Something in his expression had moved Castiel to rise. Something in his torment had caused him to rest his hand on his bowed head. Something had held him there when he had leaned against him, arms snaking around him as he shook, just slightly, and said, "What happens when I run out of reasons to keep saying no?" Castiel had held him, felt his breath against his wet shirt, and said, "You will think of new reasons." And he had. Castiel hadn't been there. He hadn't been witness to the event or privy to his thoughts, but as the world grew more grim by the day, and a demon lie stinking in the body of a young girl, she'd asked him, "Will you serve?" And somehow Sam Winchester, after professing the year before that he'd been lost, said no. Castiel, who sometimes finds that the memory of Sam's lips against his comes back to him unbidden, often wonders what reasons had come to mind when Sam had refused healing, when he had chosen pain and deformity instead of giving himself to Lucifer. He still wonders, and it's raining again. Castiel stands outside of the house Bobby has rented in Florida, watches the rain sluice from the gutters and churn on the sodden ground in little pools. He takes a moment to steel himself, to gather the strength to look upon Sam with his ruined leg and know that he can do nothing for him. He'd tried, had managed to keep him breathing moments after the initial assault itself, but nothing more. Whatever his father's plan for his wayward angel with his failing grace, the ability to correct some wrongs clearly isn't among them. His powers wane by the day, and he supposes that he is as broken as Sam is in some ways, as handicapped. It's made answering Sam's frantic call difficult because he knows what Sam will ask of him, knows what Dean's response will be, if he's still alive to give one. Castiel feels caught in a web, pulled between opposing desires so that his heart and his will and his resolve is stretched thin. Help Dean, aid Sam, risk Sam. He doesn't know what to do, and so he takes the steps up to the door, rain dripping from his brow and down to his cheeks. He knocks, as is seldom his habit, and thinks if there's no answer in 30 seconds that he'll go. It's an unfair time frame. Both men within are handicapped, and Castiel knows that he's a coward. He doesn't count past 10. The door opens and Sam stands in the doorway, leaning on the crutch he uses far less than he should. Castiel stares at the point where the plastic band surrounds Sam's forearm before looking up at him. It's easier than looking at his leg to see how it's faring, which is what he wants to do. "You came." Sam doesn't smile when he says it, doesn't do anything but school his features from a riot of panic and worry into something calmer. "You called." Sam utters a bitter half-laugh and reaches up to push his two long bangs back with his left hand. "It's that easy, then. I call, and you show up." "Today, it's that easy," Castiel replies. He feels like he should apologize. For staying away, for not lingering when he'd been around, for not doing what Sam hasn't asked him to do, though he doesn't know if Dean ever told him that he'd tried and failed once already. He doesn't apologize, doesn't know if he'd stop once he started, and neither of them needs to waste time with it. Sam will want to go. Castiel will want to tell him all of the reasons he shouldn't. And he suspects that he'll go anyway, because Dean is his friend, and he does not know if he can really refuse Sam. "Let me get my things." Just like that, without any preamble or begging, Sam decides that they're going after Dean, his injury and impaired mobility not even brought into consideration. Castiel follows him inside because he doesn't know what else to do. "I'll go," he says the moment he decides it. "I'll let you know what I find." "And if it's nothing, or if you vanish too, what then? I call a cab?" Castiel looks around for Bobby, perhaps searching for reasonable support, and finds it missing. The older man isn't here. He goes to the dining room that's serving as a study, dripping rainwater and leaving shoe-shaped puddles in his wake on the scratched wooden floor, some of them overlapping tracks left from Bobby's wheelchair. He shakes himself a little like a wet, fussy cat before stopping at the dining room table. He finds he does not care for the feeling of water dripping from his hair down the collar of his shirt, nor does he wish to ruin or water-stain the stacks and heaps of papers and maps strewn about. Bobby's taken over Dean's research. On what, he's not sure. But 7 locations are marked on a map. None of them close together, none of them holding any meaning to Castiel. A church in Oregon, a corner in Idaho, a farmhouse, a cannery, and 3 residences, all of them scattered across the country, 4 of them with a red X marked through them. Castiel fingers the map with Dean's handwriting next to each of the locations.
"Dean was tracking something?"
He hears the thump of Sam's crutch as he approaches from the other room. Sam tosses a light backpack to the floor. Castiel can hear the thump of gunmetal. "Yeah, an angel." It's on the tip of his tongue to ask,
"Why didn't you call me?"
But he thinks of the 2 voice messages from Dean, one excited, one irritated and bitter, demanding that he call.
"Tell me."
"Here, in Oregon," Sam says, leaning over the desk and pointing to the map. "An 88-year-old woman had a heart attack during a church service. According to the newspaper, she says an angel appeared and healed her on the spot." Sam moves his long finger over the map. Castiel watches it move, catches the sight of the fingernail chewed down to the quick. "And in Idaho, a 9-year-old on a bike was hit by a car. Same story. His older sister says that an angel came down from heaven and healed him. The kid was apparently crushed. The sister said she was screaming, and then a woman made of white light told her not to cry and touched her brother. He sat up, asked if his mom was going to be pissed that he wrecked his new bike. Then in Dallas, again in Wilmington, and pretty much, yeah, it's like scattershot. She just drops down out of the sky and fixes people."
"Why would..."
Castiel's gaze drops to Sam's right leg in its brace and its boot the same time Sam's does.
"I see."
He ignores how looking at Sam's leg makes him feel an unwelcome combination of guilt and sadness.
"Why would Dean think this angel would be trustworthy? Why does he think she won't simply make the same offer as the one who damaged you, or worse, take him to a place where Michael can talk Dean into acquiescence personally?"
Sam blanches.
"He could do that? There's a place where he could?"
"Naturally, in any vessel that could house him long enough, just as Lucifer has, though Lucifer has a rather unique set of challenges when it comes to his vessels. But I suspect if we dug deep enough, we would find a similar connection between his borrowed vessel and what Michael would have to find."
"What?"
Castiel looks at his leg again and figures the time to mince words has long since passed.
"Blood. You must have surely wondered if the body Lucifer inhabits now isn't some distant relation to you. You and Dean both. Michael would need the same. Better if he could find a direct line, another sibling or a child. He might even be able to use close blood as a permanent substitute for Dean. Not so easy for Lucifer, though, I'm sorry to say."
Sam hisses out what Castiel assumes to be an expletive, and his hand unconsciously shifts on the map, covering the entire state of Indiana.
Would angels know if Dean had a kid? Even if he didn't know or wasn't really sure? There's more to what Sam's asking. Something Castiel thinks might lay beneath his palm, somewhere in Indiana. If Dean had a child, whether he knew it or not, Heaven would already be in possession of him or her, unless the child was hidden, as I have hidden you and Dean, or they were protected from them by a power greater than any of my siblings possess.
You mean God?
I mean God. Another archangel could hide such a child easily enough, but they are either dead, missing, or already in play. Sam, do you believe Dean to have fathered a child? Do you think that's where he's gone?
Crap, Cass. I don't know. We checked. Before Dean went to hell, we checked. All we found out was that there was never really a paternity test run on the kid. He let it go, seemed happy with that answer, and at the time, I was good with whatever made him happy.
Do I think that's where he's gone? Sam shifts, pulls his hand from the grip of his crutch to finger his brace.
No, not unless he met with this angel, and she told him the boy was in trouble. He was pretty focused on finding someone willing to fix my leg. Things haven't been that great lately.
You have been in pain.
Yes, Sam replies, and allows himself a moment to close his eyes. Always am.
I'm sorry, Sam.
Castiel reaches towards him, but Sam holds out a hand to stay him. He doesn't open his eyes for a moment, needs to take a breath as if centering himself, but he doesn't accept the touch, perhaps not the apology either.
Don't, just, not now, okay? We need to find Dean. I'm the reason for this whole sorry mess, so the least we can do is find him.
Castiel lets his hand drop to the side. Doesn't feel a sting in the reproach, though he wants to counsel Sam against feeling guilty. He has stayed away because watching Sam limp through his days in pain without the ability to help him has been too difficult. He can't imagine what it must have been like for Dean, who, despite pitfalls, seems to have been bred to love and protect his brother, an irony considering the Winchester's destiny.
Then tell me how Dean was tracking this angel and why he thought he could trust her.
Sam bends over the desk again and pulls another stack of paper from the pile. They look to be weather reports. We tracked some unusual weather in 4 of the areas where the miracles occurred. 3 of the sites were in warmer climates, Dallas, Southern California, here in Florida, but the rest all experienced unseasonably mild weather in the week prior to the angel showing up.
That's it.
We've tracked demons with less, Sam says, somewhat defensively. Look, here in Wilmington, rose gardens started to bloom and it was 60 degrees. And in Michigan, sunny skies, green grass, budding trees. It's weird, right? Well, we pay attention to weird. Castiel starts to feel an unexpected itch at the base of his spine, another decidedly human response that he can't quite classify and quantify, and it takes him a moment to sort his body's reactions out. He realizes that he feels something like disquiet, something like suspicion, and maybe hope.
Dean knows this angel?
He says you spoke highly of her.
I spoke highly of Michael once. Castiel reminds him.
Sam reaches again for the straps of his brace with his free hand, his new nervous tic, Castiel supposes.
He said she was there when you dragged him out of hell? Said you didn't think she'd ever gone back to heaven afterwards?
Castiel looks at Sam's leg again, is unable to keep from doing it as suspicion becomes fact. Hope and dread blossom equally, as if the angel in question has arrived and brought the June sun with her.
Muriel.
So you do know her? She was there. In hell, I mean.
She was there, Castiel replies slowly. And Dean is not wrong. I would still speak highly of her. But, Sam, I wouldn't trust her. Muriel's motives are...
He palms some of the rainwater from his forehead, searching for an adequate way to describe someone he cannot quite put into words.
difficult to understand. She could help you, to be sure, might even be willing to, but Dean, she will not respond well to. She did not like what she saw in the pit, and was displeased that Heaven had ordered what she termed a monster to be returned to Earth. Dean's not a monster.
Sam's grip tightens reflexively on his crutch for a moment, knuckles turning white, and Castiel finds himself wondering if Sam's ever struck anyone with it.
He was. You know that.
Not any worse than...
Don't compare the two, Sam. Not until you've seen it. Now, do you want to find your brother or debate his merits for the next decade?
The corner of Sam's mouth twitches with what might be classified as just barely a smile, and he ducks his head to hide it. Sam reaches around the scattered papers and maps on the desk for his laptop, and turns it so that it faces them both. We started tracking new weather patterns when Dean disappeared. He was in Helena 4 days ago. Bobby's sent someone out there already to check things out, find the car, find Dean, but the weather's already turned cold. 3 new patterns popped up same time Dean went to Montana. A pecan farm in Brunswick, Missouri, half of the trees are in bloom. Colorado, where it's apparently a terrible week for skiing, and here in New Hampshire. The snow's melted and tulips are coming up. Now, Bobby's got someone in New Hampshire, someone who miraculously doesn't want Dean or me in a box, and he's gone to Colorado himself along with Rufus. That leaves us with Brunswick.
If she's even there, it doesn't mean Dean will be or that she'll even talk to you.
Yeah, well, that's where you come in. She might not make time for me, but you guys fought through hell together. Figure she might have more to say to you.
Bobby thought so too, though he didn't want you going.
Yeah. Sam lets out a short bark of laughter as he awkwardly bends down to retrieve his backpack. He has to stretch, has to slide his lame leg out a little bit so that he can reach down with his long arms to grab it from the floor, but he manages.
One cripple telling another cripple that he doesn't think he's up for the job. It sounded like crap when Bobby said it, and he knew it. I could still say no, Castiel tells him.
Sam quirks that fraction of a smile at him again and shakes his head.
Nah, he won't. You gave Heaven both fingers for Dean. You'll look for him, and you'll take me with, because you feel guilty about my leg, and suck at telling me no.
Castiel tries it on for size anyway.
No, it doesn't take,
and though he finds Sam's raised eyebrow infinitely annoying, he takes the taller man by the shoulder and thinks of pecan trees. Half the orchard is indeed in bloom when they arrive. Castiel has a moment to notice it, and another to take in Sam as he tilts his head momentarily skyward to drink in the warmth from the winter sun that's too far away to provide as it does. The weather isn't quite June, isn't quite January, but seems to be at war with itself, lost between winter and spring. The trees overhead are full and green, leaves whisper against one another on a breeze that's warm one moment, cool the next. Remnants of last fall's harvest crack beneath their shoes as they walk on grass that's sometimes virgin green and other times pale and withered over a hard-packed ground.
A work in progress?
Sam asks, gesturing towards a cluster of purple snowdrops surrounded by unopened dandelions.
Perhaps, or one abandoned. The main structure seems to be there, he says, pointing to a low building visible through the rows of trees.
Sam sets off limping, the butt of his crutch sinking here and there where the earth is soft and dark. Castiel catches up to him and shakes his head as he reaches towards his arm again.
I can walk, Sam says.
Castiel takes him by the arm and wills them to the storefront. In the second after his wings stop rustling, he gives Sam a stern look.
No one likes a martyr. I've met my fair share, and they're annoying. Don't be annoying.
Bully, Sam replies lightly, and gestures with his crutch. Think anyone thinks that's really a pecan?
Castiel glances at a mammoth, ugly hulk of cement primitively rendered in the shape of a pecan, next to a sign that proclaims it to be the world's largest. It's less interesting than the largest ball of twine that he'd visited after Dean had regaled him with stories. He hadn't understood the appeal then, and he's not sure that he gets it now.
"No," he tells Sam, and heads to the storefront.
He causes the tumblers in the lock to turn before Sam reaches in his jacket for a lockpick. The shop is empty and quiet, full of antiques, bric-a-brac, and homespun crafts. Some of it he finds pleasing. Most of it he regards with an eye jaded by too much time spent with the Winchesters, as he wonders at the human need to surround themselves with so much junk. Even as he's thinking it, Sam fingers a shining bit of peach-colored glass in the shape of a hen. He regards it sadly, fondly, and Castiel cannot fathom why, until Sam catches him looking.
"Jess had one of these. She used to keep chocolate-covered coffee beans in it. Stupid-looking thing."
He doesn't look like he finds anything stupid about it, though Castiel agrees with the statement nonetheless. He files away the information along with other strange nuggets of things he knows about Sam. They explore the rest of the shop, Sam limping carefully between aisles of old crockery and hurricane lanterns, leaving the tiny price tags fluttering on their strings like snowflakes as he passes. They find nothing of interest, no signs of Muriel, or anything remotely like an angel, save himself and a rather distressing array of girlish figurines sporting wings above the backs of their pastel evening gowns.
"Maybe your next vessel..."
"Shut up," Castiel says, and nudges him in the direction of the narrow hall beyond the main floor of the shop. There's a bathroom immediately to the left of them, one reeking of artificial lavender and bleach. Castiel is not amused to see more ceramic angels kneeling in prayer on a lace doily over the top of the toilet, though he catches Sam's amused snort. They follow the hallway back, find a larger room full of things too broken and old to be called anything other than junk, and a tiny office. Sam rifles through the desk, as is his habit, and yields nothing other than a carbon copy of a handwritten receipt. The words, "Thank you," emblazoned across the top.
"Most recent one. It's dated 2 days before Christmas. I don't think this place has been open since then. Guess no one came to check out the trees blooming out of season."
"It is a bust," Castiel says, borrowing one of Dean's phrases. He knows he's gotten it right when Sam nods. They return to the hallway, and Sam unlocks the back door, leading them through it, a crutch crunching down when they reach gravel on the outside. Sam glances around, takes in the empty boxes stacked next to the building, and slumps his shoulders.
"Do you get anything?"
"If you mean, do I sense anything? No. Although..."
Castiel steps out onto the gravel and into the sunshine beneath the cloudless sky. He squints into the distance and points.
"We should take a look at that."
Sam follows the path of his finger and turns to him.
"The field?"
"The tree."
"Which?"
Castiel reaches for him again and takes them to what he'd seen back at the shop 5 miles south of them. He points again, this time directly overhead to the huge dogwood covered in sweet-smelling white blossoms that are easily the size of his fist.
"That tree."
Sam wavers for a moment on his feet, dizzied and off balance. Castiel steadies him and does not acknowledge the frustrated glare he gets for the assistance, or perhaps for the reason it's needed. Sam limps closer to the tree and shoulders his backpack more securely before stretching out a hand to touch the bark. He doesn't find anything unusual and turns back to him to raise an eyebrow.
"Not the kind of tree with someone's grace in the middle of it, I guess."
"No, but definitely the sort that has seen Muriel's hand. She's been here."
"Let's hope she's coming back and that she knows where Dean is," Sam replies.
He inclines his head in the direction of the house nearby, and Castiel nods, walks with him as he limps, and keeps his hand at the small of his back. Sam doesn't complain. The house is small, with a sagging peaked roof over broken curlicues of wood Castiel knows to be called gingerbread, though he's never really been sure why. Though the windows are boarded and the paint peeling giving more than just an impression of disuse and abandonment, the front yard is bright. Wild roses climb the side of the house and twine through the splintering rails of the front porch. Daffodils, marigold, and fragile pansies vie for space among the lush, wildly overgrown grass and weeds. A flurry of gray finches beep at them from the lip of a puddle of drying rainwater before scattering in a flurry of alarm at their footfalls.
"Muriel must be great for seasonal affective disorder," Sam says, and starts for the front porch.
Castiel doesn't answer, but gets in front of him to take the lead, not at all certain that he trusts the stability of the wood, and unwilling to risk breaking Sam's other leg if he should fall through it. Though the bowed wood groans beneath him, it holds, and Castiel deems it sound enough. He motions for Sam to follow him, earns a scowl for it, and then has to busy himself with the door while Sam takes the 4 steps slowly, swinging his injured leg wide. The door isn't locked, merely rusted, and it gives way easily enough when Castiel pushes against it. The dust inside is thick, cloying enough to set his nose to twitching. Sam sneezes. They step through slanted shafts of sunlight that filter through the gaps in the boards over the windows, and into what must have long ago been a parlor. There are no footprints in the thick, nearly white carpet of dust that lines the floors, but the fireplace is clean. The river stone it's made of gleams here and there with bits of quartz. A vase of roses sits on the mantel. Castiel and Sam both glance at the fireplace and the absence of footprints. Castiel rises slightly off the floor to show him how it had been done, and though he's just transported him almost 1,000 miles, Sam's eyes still widen slightly in wonder.
"Can you walk on water, too?"
"If the occasion calls for it," Castiel replies. He feels a warning thrill start to ring upward from his toes and set his teeth to humming, and Castiel falls, suddenly feeling as though his wings and his bones have been weighted with lead. He stands, or tries to, and grunts as he strains and feels something yank cruelly on him, on his grace, his wings.
"Cass?
Stay back," Cass commands, but Sam's already on the move, already limping towards him, his shoe and his orthotic boot and his crutch sending up tiny clouds of dust.
"Sam, I can't move. Stay where you are."
"I can move," Sam tells him, and he can. Whatever's affecting Castiel so, Sam seems immune, and he reaches his side as the floor beneath them starts to groan. Castiel is beginning to suspect that he doesn't just feel like he's been weighted down, but that he actually has been when the wood starts to splinter. He tries to push Sam, but his arms feel so heavy, and, frustratingly typical of the man, Sam's trying to pull him instead of taking heed of the floor starting to crack beneath them like thin ice.
"Go!"
His shout is seconds too late, and the floor falls beneath his newly unbearable weight. He has a moment of panic when he fears that Sam will be crushed beneath him, but the opposite is so, and they land in a tangled heap of limbs and splintered wood, Sam crying out as they hit. Castiel is pinned, both by the weight in his limbs and his wings, and by Sam, who lies splayed over the top of him, his breath ragged against his cheek. He tries to lift a hand to check Sam for injuries, but can't make his limbs comply. He instead takes comfort in the fact that Sam's still breathing, and that he hasn't, as of yet, made any further complaints of pain.
"Sam," he grunts out, "are you..."
"Fuck,"
Sam replies. He rolls awkwardly off him, the buckles of his leg brace digging into Castiel's own thigh as he shifts in the debris. The dust drifts down from the floor above them,
so thick that it's momentarily like a fog settling in the darkness of the basement or root cellar they've landed in. Sam coughs and, after a moment, draws in a shuddering breath and repeats the action in earnest. Castiel can see well enough in the gloom to catch sight of Sam's face growing alarmingly red, and the breaths he draws in around the coughing fit seem labored, shaky. But it subsides, and Sam sits up carefully, hand automatically reaching down to dig at his leg beneath the straps of his brace as he spits something thick and wet to the floor.
"Did you injure yourself?"
"No more than usual," Sam wheezes. "You broke my fall pretty nicely. I could do without the dust, though. Can you move?"
Though he knows it's futile, Castiel tries again, strains until he can feel muscles creak and rip beneath his skin. He coughs, an echo of Sam, and swallows several times until his throat feels more or less midline again. He supposes that he's broken his neck, supposes that it's healed strangely, but he can still speak, so, as Dean would say, he counts it as a win.
"No."
"What the hell?"
"Spell, perhaps." He looks through the settling dust haze to the wall opposite him. He can make out sigils etched into the rock wall of the foundation, a great many of them, mostly in Enochian, crossed here and there with a myriad of other scratching. He takes it in, manages to turn his head left and right to investigate further, despite the rip-heel-rip of the muscles in his neck. It's binding magic, not terribly dissimilar to previous scribbling they've run across before that was used to forbid entry to an angel.
"The walls," he tells Sam, and when his voice is gravelly and thick, he swallows hard and shifts as much as he can until things are more or less straight again in his throat.
"They are covered in binding magic. Very old, very powerful spell work."
"Binding?" Sam asks, scooting closer to him so carefully on his backside with his lame leg stretched out.
"What for?"
Castiel looks up at the hole in the floor above him.
"To capture an angel. They have succeeded, more or less, though I suspect they were looking for someone more powerful than I."
"Muriel."
"Very likely."
Crap. This just gets better and better. Bobby and Dean are going to kill me, or you. Probably both of us.
Sam squints at the wall and starts the slow process of trying to stand.
He slips dangerously in the rubble, arms windmilling in a way too desperate to be comical, despite the ridiculous span of his limbs. Sam manages to stand, manages to get his feet beneath him, though he favors the right still and holds it carefully as if it's made of glass. He lurches through the rubble and puts his palm to the river rock foundation.
"Can't see anything."
"Your hand is over one sigil,"
Castiel tells him, and Sam nods. He reaches into his jacket, pulls out both a sturdy flashlight and a knife from a sheath that Castiel cannot see. Sam turns on the light, shines it at the wall, and his expression tells him that the sigils are invisible to human eyes. Still, he touches the wall in very nearly the same place where his palm had been seconds ago, and starts to scratch with the knife. Minute bits of stone and dust work free beneath the knife, but the sigil remains intact. Sam looks at him over his shoulder, twisting to the right to minimize the pull on his deformed bones and constantly stressed muscles, and Castiel tries to shake his head, but can't.
"It remains."
Sam gives the wall a look that suggests it's become his personal nemesis, and starts working with the knife in earnest, digging at it until a fist-sized chunk comes free. Castiel can still see the sigil glowing faintly.
"No good," Castiel tells him. "The sigils themselves are protected."
"Awesome," Sam replies, and starts coughing as he sheathes the knife back in his jacket and shines the light around, staring at the walls critically.
"You figure there's a set of protection symbols for the sigils themselves here somewhere?"
"Possibly. If you can find it and destroy it, you may be able to deface enough of the wall to get me free.
Need more light, Sam tells him, still coughing in a way that sounds tight and dry.
Sam?
Sam waves him off with the hand holding the flashlight, causing its beam to cut through the settling dust. He looks up at the hole in the ceiling critically, and then shines the light around the debris until his crutch, half buried beneath splintered boards, is dully illuminated. Castiel doesn't think the crutch will give him much stability amongst the rubble, but Sam seems to have a different idea. He steps over him, awkwardly but still with care, as if afraid of hurting him, which Castiel finds both a little insulting and equally endearing, and moves to the far edge of the wall. He cannot see Sam from this angle, not without straining terribly to turn his head, so he waits, listening as he hears the sound of something being dragged. Sam comes back into his eyeline, shoving a crate, though he has to bend over, bad leg stretched out slightly as he heaves and shoves at the wooden box. His crutch bangs against the old wood from where it's looped over his wrist. Castiel is about to caution him against standing on the crate, not certain it'll support his weight, but Sam is already balancing on his bad leg and stepping up on it. The wood groans as ominously as the floor had before crashing beneath them, but it holds as Sam gets up on it. He stretches and comes up short, fingers still a foot away from the hole above them. He thinks Sam will get down, something which Castiel is surprised to find that he wants in a desperately concerned human sort of way. But Sam pulls his crutch from his wrist and stretches up with it, clawing at the uneven lip of the hole with the wrist support. It's clever, and he knows Sam's upper body has not lost muscle or strength, but he still holds his breath as the crutch bounces over wood and catches. Sam tests it, and it comes free, nearly causing him to topple from the crate, but he catches his balance with a wheezing curse that Castiel finds worrisome. He tries again, manages to get the sturdy plastic wedged between a gap in the broken floorboards, and pulls. It holds fast. Sam tests his weight and, when it holds, he starts to climb, the flashlight gripped between his teeth. He almost makes it. Sam pulls himself up until he can catch the edge of the floor with his fingers, and he lets go of his crutch to grab for better purchase. The crutch remains wedged, and this proves to be a good thing, a fucking godsend, as Dean would say, when the jagged board Sam's got hold of starts splintering beneath his fingers. He slips, is falling, and Castiel can't think of what will happen if he goes down with the box beneath him and his leg already unable to tolerate much more than the simple act of walking, let alone supporting him through a bad fall, and he finds he's holding his breath again as Sam grabs desperately for the crutch. He gets hold of it and swings for a moment before it comes loose as well. He manages to drop back down onto the crate, mostly on his left leg, though he swears and cries out as he topples the short distance to the floor. Sam lies there for several minutes, breath ragged and tight-sounding, and Castiel cannot think if it's because he's in terrible pain or because something in the air has affected his breathing. He figures it's both when Sam groans, rolls towards him, good leg pinned beneath him, and then turns in on himself to hack loudly against his sleeve.
Sam! Sam!
Okay, Sam gets out, though Castiel does not believe him. He coughs for another minute, draws in a tight, wheezing breath, and reaches for the flashlight. The shine of tears is in his eyes when he turns to him, and his face is once again beet red.
Oh, shit.
Sam turns to hack against his left shoulder, as if politeness is still called for in this situation. The fit passes.
I'll try again.
No, Castiel tells him, and it's nothing short of a command. You will injure yourself further if you haven't already. Call for help, Sam. It may take time for Bobby to reach us or for him to send someone who might be closer, but that's the only logical course of action, and your breathing is concerning.
Friggin' dust,
Sam laments, and scoots closer to him awkwardly on his backside until he's large and warm and comfortable against Castiel's side. He sits with his left leg curled against him, right stretched out next to Castiel's head. Sam reaches into his coat and pulls out his cell phone, looking for a moment as if it's going to snap and yell at him as he expects Bobby to. He thinks this is hardly the time to worry about recriminations, and even if Sam doesn't agree, he brushes the phone's face to clear it of the dust that found its way to it, even through the layers of his clothing. He turns it on, its blue glow reassuring, and turns slightly, holding it this way and that, looking for the bars that denote signal strength Castiel knows, until dialing Bobby's number. Bobby must not waste time with the usual greetings or pleasantries, must have expected Sam to be anywhere but where he's left him in Florida, because the first thing Sam says isn't, "Hello," or the more usual, "Hey, Bobby," but, "Brunswick, Missouri." He gets so far as to eke out an almost indignant sounding, "It's Dean, I couldn't just hang out in Florida," before he starts coughing again. Castiel can hear Bobby's voice sounding tinny, and so far away, calling for him, but Sam can't answer. He bends over, hacking miserably, hands shaking as he fumbles with the phone and presses a button on the touch screen. "Damn it, boy, what's happening?" Bobby's voice rings out over the speaker. Sam sets the phone on Castiel's chest, waves at it meaningfully, and then scoots slightly away, turning to one side to muffle the coughs against his arm. "We fell," Castiel tells Bobby. "Cass fell? Well, get up and get him out of whatever mess he's gotten you two into. Winchesters, I swear, they were all born to give me friggin' heart problems." "Bobby, there are binding sigils worked into the foundation. I cannot move, and we cannot destroy them. They're protected. There's likely a protection sigil somewhere preventing us from harming them enough to get free. And Sam. Sam is in no shape to get out or to look for the sigil himself." "Well, he'll just have to try," Bobby tells him, and though Castiel wants to reach through the phone and throttle the older man, Sam nods grimly and works his way slowly to his feet, coughing still as he gets up and starts shining the light around the cellar, as if he can see the sigils, though Castiel knows he can't. "His breathing don't sound too great." Sam looks behind him to scowl at the phone, but continues forward, flashlight shining this way and that as he scans the walls impotently. "There is a great deal of dust," Castiel says, "and it seems to be bothering him." "Triggering his asthma, more like," Bobby replies, "because asthma is just what a crippled kid in the apocalypse needs to really balance crap out. Get him to get his inhaler and take a couple of hits off it. And if he doesn't have it, tell him I'm gonna wring his neck and let Dean do the same when he shows up." "I can friggin' hear you, you know," Sam hacks out, already limping back towards Castiel. "No luck finding Dean?" Bobby doesn't say anything for several seconds, leaving the room silent but for the sound of Sam carefully navigating his way through the debris and the steady hiss of white noise from the cell phone. Castiel can see Sam's shoulders slump from where he lies, and it gives him a pang of something he can't quite put a name to. He wants to get up. He wants to take Sam out of this dark room where the dust makes him cough and wheeze. He wants to take him somewhere safe and scour the earth for Dean, because he's starting to worry, a feeling somehow more normal and easier to understand when it's on Dean's behalf. "Not yet," Bobby finally answers. "We looked, but the angel'd already cleared out before we'd gotten to Aspen, and there wasn't any sign of Dean." "We have to find him, Bobby," Sam says quietly. His subdued tone is only partially due to his diminished breathing. "Get your inhaler, boy." Sam nods, looking miserable, Castiel thinks, and continues towards him. He finds his pack and bends in his awkward way, right leg shifting out at an angle. He pulls it to him. When it does not come because it's trapped beneath Castiel's leg, Sam bends his good leg and gets a more secure grip on the bag. He yanks it. The rattle coming from the bag is not reassuring. It sounds like the rub of many broken things. Sam nearly falls back to the floor when he finally jerks it free, but he manages to keep his balance with another frantic windmilling of his arms. He frowns as his fingers work through the contents of the bag. He looks at Cass, bites his lip in a way that Castiel does not like at all, and pulls out his inhaler. It's in pieces. Castiel has seen the device enough to be familiar with its shape, and what he sees now assures him that Sam will not be able to get his medicine. The plastic holder is smashed, cracked down the middle, the tiny canister of medication crushed. He can see the faint shine of leaking residue on Sam's fingers.
"Well," Sam wheezes, "that's a problem."
"What now?" Bobby asks, voice tinny and concerned.
"Inhaler's smashed," Sam answers.
"Son of a... Well, ain't that just the best news I heard all day?" Bobby replies. "Well, crap. Rufus and me are in Colorado, about an hour from the Kansas border. That puts us at least 10 hours from you. I can't think of anyone that don't want Sam dead who might be closer. But I'll work on it."
"No."
Castiel tries to crane his neck to get a better look at Sam, feels the weight of the sigils pull against him, squeezing his vessel's throat.
"Sam."
"Someone laid a trap," Sam says, voice strong despite the way he wheezes with each inhalation of breath.
"Probably demons. They could come back, and I don't want anyone hurt. There's been enough people hurt because of something I did. Ellen and Joe and... just... no. Okay? No more."
Castiel can only get a glimpse of shaggy hair falling over Sam's face, but he doesn't have to see him to know that there's regret on his face and that he's thinking not just of the casualties leading up to Sam setting Lucifer free, but of all of those who have suffered and died since. Doesn't have to have Sam in front of him to know that Dean is weighing heavily on his mind, and that as much as he needs Dean to be all right, a large part of him fears that he's already lost, already gone.
"I said I'll work on it," Bobby says gruffly. "If I think of anyone, you can just suck it up and have a fit on me later about it. Though honestly, it ain't looking that great. We already have most everyone I'd trust out looking for Dean. Now we're gonna need directions so we're not driving all over God's green earth trying to find you two."
Sam only hangs his head. Castiel is the one to give directions, and though he knows of no roads or signs, for their trip from the pecan farm hadn't really allowed for such details, he still knows their latitude and longitude. He could give them their exact distance from the sun if required.
"Got it," Bobby tells them. "You boys just wait it out. Look for the symbols if you can, Sam, but try not to aggravate your breathing none. Last thing you need is to have a full-blown attack right now. Castiel, you keep him calm if he gets any worse."
Sam's back within Castiel's eyeline, and he can see him scowl.
"I will do my best," Castiel tells Bobby.
They end the call without extended goodbyes and conversation, Bobby telling them to hang on until they get there. Sam reaches down, bent over in his uncomfortable-looking way and hair falling in his face as he reaches for his cell phone. He turns it off and puts it back into his jacket.
"You should rest," Castiel tells him.
Sam doesn't answer or comply, but takes his flashlight again, working the beam over the walls and the floor.
"Do you suppose the protection symbols are invisible, too?"
"I don't know. It would seem like poor planning to have them easily found."
"Kinda what I thought,"
Sam replies.
"Let's just start with what we can do. Can you turn your head at all? If I shine the flashlight, you think you'll be able to see anything?"
"I don't need the light," Castiel tells him, unreasonably offended that Sam thinks he's lost that much of his ability. "And I can turn my head. It is difficult, but possible."
"Right," Sam replies. "Then let's do this as methodically as we can. Start with what you can see without turning."
Castiel looks and says,
"Nothing in front,"
and is ready to turn his head, but Sam waves him off irritably.
"I said, methodically."
Sam wheezes. He reaches into his bag and pulls out a can of orange paint, the sort he and Dean frequently use for devil's traps and sigils of their own. Castiel cannot figure what Sam means to do with it until he moves to the far wall awkwardly and holds out the can.
"How far can you see?"
He still doesn't understand, and Sam, who has more than a few reasons to be impatient with him, remains calm and assumes the tone of a teacher. Castiel thinks it's a little endearing, a little condescending, and he wonders how Dean handles it when Sam slips into this mode.
"Since I can't see these things, you have to look for me. Your field of vision isn't the greatest with your head down, so I want to mark off where you can and can't see. Worst comes to worst, I'll start blasting away at any areas that are outside of your eyeline. So, can you see here?"
Sam asks, shining the flashlight against the wall of the root cellar.
"Yes," Castiel replies. "How about here?"
He thinks Sam holds up a hand, but he can't quite see it, not without turning his head. Castiel tells him no, and Sam shakes the can and sprays the wall.
"Okay, so without turning, your visual range on the left starts here. How far to my right can you see?"
"To the edge of the crate. No, the other one."
"And that's seeing clearly, right? You can see the sigils?"
"Well enough to know that what we're looking for is not there," Castiel tells him.
"Good," Sam says. "Good."
He makes another mark with the paint.
"If we mark off where we've been, I think it'll help me. Maybe be less frustrating. Now, turn your head."
Sam cringes at the sound of popping, ripping flesh as Castiel turns, and he thinks he should tell him that it's all right, that he does still heal after all, but he concentrates on turning and says nothing. He looks. Sam marks off how far he can see so they won't continue to waste their time or cover areas already scanned, and Castiel turns again. He sees nothing. Sigils by the dozens, but nothing unexpected. Nothing that looks to be the protection symbols. Castiel's frustrated, and more than a little concerned, as Sam's breathing gets worse with each inhalation of dust, and now the fumes from the spray paint. He misses Sam's intent when he comes at him and doesn't know what the man means to do until he reaches down to grab hold of him and pull him up.
"Sam," Castiel tells him, "you cannot lift me. If it were that easy."
"Can't lift," Sam grunts out in agreement. "But maybe I can spin you around some. Gotta turn you around and maybe sit you up if I can. Otherwise, I might as well start shooting the walls and floor behind you and hope to God I get lucky."
"But you're breathing," Castiel says.
Sam wheezes terribly, as if in response, but shakes his head.
"I know traps, Cass. Dad taught us pretty well, me and Dean. You lay a trap, and either you check it pretty frequently to see if you've snared something, or you have a bell or something that lets you know that something's caught. We're caught. Don't..."
He grunts as he pulls on Castiel by the lapels of his trench coat and gets nowhere.
"Don't want to be here when whoever laid the trap comes to see what they've caught."
His logic is sound. Castiel cannot argue with that, but Sam's breathing is too high, too labored. He doesn't want to be here when whichever of Lucifer's minions shows up to investigate their prize, but he wants to be here with Sam dead next to him even less.
"You won't help us if you're dead," Castiel says simply, hating his own logic and how cold it sounds. "You must rest, Sam, if only for a minute. Give yourself time to breathe."
Sam drops his head,
shaggy hair falling over his eyes and blocking his face from Castiel's view. He gasps, in and out and in again, before looking up at him.
"I know this, too," Sam says. "Between my leg and my breathing, I'm going to run out of steam. I can rest, maybe get the breathing more or less under control, but chances are good I won't get up again without a lot of rest and drugs, neither of which seem likely. Right now, I'm up and moving. In an hour, better I do what I can while I can. And if I die, well..."
He shrugs.
"Well?" "Well, it's not like Lucifer's gonna let me stay that way," Sam tells him quietly.
Castiel wants to object. The words are rising up in his throat, but he doesn't say them. Just looks at Sam, in far more torment over being so useless to his missing brother than he is from his physical shortcomings, or even from the weight of the devil pressing down on him. It's clear on his face. Dean's just about Sam's entire world, more so now since his injury than perhaps he ever was before, and if Castiel feels a little pang at not occupying a significant enough spot in the spectrum of Sam's life, he doesn't let it bother him. He understands, envies Dean a little, which is distressingly shallow and too uncomfortably human, but he understands.
"Use the belt," Castiel says by way of reply. "It is stronger than fabric, and you might get a sound enough grip to spin me."
"Or," Sam says, brightening somewhat even though his face is still distressingly red and sweaty, "maybe even sit you up?" He doesn't go for Castiel's belt as he'd intended, but instead unbuckles his own and sets it aside. He then reaches for Castiel's pants, says nothing as he undoes the buckle of his belt, though a rueful smile makes his lips quirk for half a second.
"Your brother would not be able to resist commenting, you know."
"Guess it's a good thing you didn't sleep with him, then," Sam replies. Despite their desperate situation, Castiel feels a queer sense of hilarity and mortification well up within him at the very thought of coupling with Dean. Not so long ago, the same would have been true of Sam, or, likely, any human. But not now, not since he'd felt what it was like to have skin against his skin, lips against his lips, and the feel of Sam's breath in his ear. But Dean... it's like imagining himself sleeping with his own child, or his own parent. Maybe both.
"You're making the worst face," Sam says.
He flips open a small pocket knife and sets to cutting Castiel's belt loops.
"Imagining an exchange of bodily fluids with your brother must bring that about."
"Gross." Sam has cut through all of the belt loops that he can reach, and he takes hold of the leather strap itself by both ends and yanks it upward. The last of the loops on the back of his trousers rip apart, and Sam is able to pull the belt up around Castiel's chest.
"You ripped my pants," Castiel says inanely.
"Not the first time," Sam replies, and quirks another fraction of a grin at him. "See? I couldn't resist commenting after all. Must run in the family."
"It would."
Sam, still bent over him uncomfortably with his bad leg stretched out to the side, smiles again, this time a full smile, and Castiel thinks that if they get out of this, and if they find Dean, that he'll stick around for a while. It's hard looking at Sam so constantly in pain. The guilt he feels every time he sees him grimace is overwhelming, but he realizes right then that he's missed him. And it's such an utterly surprising feeling that he doesn't think he should discount it or dismiss it. Sam buckles Castiel's belt again and then loops his own through it. He isn't sure what he's doing or why, but when Sam stands, Castiel sees that it's going to be easier for him to pull now that he's got a longer length to work with. He's upright, not bent over and balancing awkwardly,
and he should be able to use more of the remaining strength in his undamaged limbs to get a good grip. He steps over Cass and starts to pull. Sam grunts and wheezes out,
"Jesus, you're heavy."
Then he turns so that he's not pulling from the side or trying to back up, but straining forward. The cords on Sam's neck stand out as he uses all of his upper body strength to try to drag Castiel in a circle. He moves barely more than an inch, and Sam sucks in several choked-sounding breaths before putting his entire body into the effort. It's on the tip of his tongue to counsel Sam not to do it, to stop before he damages his already ruined leg, but he's starting to move in a slow, agonized circle in the dirt and debris. His arms are widespread, and he's reminded of children lying down in the snow to make the shapes of angels. Castiel is almost desperately hysterical at the thought of what he must look like, of how helpless he is as Sam slowly, painfully, spins him. Sam's wheeze has turned into a terrible, grating gasp, and Castiel is starting to think that if he counts, he might actually reach the end of Sam's breaths. "Stop, Sam. It's enough. Stop." He doesn't, and as Castiel is weighted down, leaden and helpless, he can do nothing other than protest as Sam moves to stand between his legs and pull again, this time struggling with his entire body weight to pull him upright. His legs are shaking, the right sliding and giving way an inch at a time, and Castiel thinks he's going to fall. He doesn't, and his leg doesn't buckle. But that may only be the metal reinforcements of the brace that keep him from crumpling.
"Sam, you have to stop."
"No." It's nothing more than a wheeze, but Castiel can hear him. Somehow, Sam's doing it. Castiel doesn't like to think what it's costing him, but Sam's pulling him up and likely killing himself doing it. He wonders if he's pulling muscles, wonders if bones will crack under the strain, and even as his head leaves the floor, he strains to listen for it, even though there isn't anything he can do for him if it happens. Sam's pulling him up, and when Castiel feels his arms move, he starts to struggle, starts leaning forward to help as best as he can. He manages to turn his palms, gets them braced against the floor as Sam gives one last desperate tug, and the belt around Castiel's chest snaps. Sam falls and goes down heavily, gasping and moaning as he breathes in the dust of the debris pressed against his cheek. Castiel can't lean forward anymore to see if he's all right, but he remains braced on his palms and manages to stay upright.
"Sam! Sam!"
He doesn't answer, doesn't do anything for several long moments other than choke out broken, tight-sounding gasps on the floor, sending up tiny clouds of dust to join the larger cloud made by his struggle and his fall. Castiel feels like shouting at him, ordering him to get up, but he tries not to let his helplessness fuel his panic.
"Roll over, Sam," he says as gently as he can. "At least get your face out of the dust if you can't sit up. You'll only make it worse."
He doesn't think for a minute that Sam's going to manage it, but with what seems like monumental effort, Sam turns his head, then his shoulders. The heaviness of his brace and the uncooperative nature of his leg has him flopping over in an ungainly twist of limbs. But he does it, and lies there breathing for several moments. His arms, Castiel notes, twitch every few seconds, and he's still holding his belt tightly in his hands as if his brain hasn't caught up with the fact that he can now let go. Castiel forces his lungs to combat the heaviness that drags him down to the floor. It's suddenly vital to breathe, as if the act will somehow help Sam along, keep his chest rising and falling.
"Better?"
He doesn't know why he asks. The answer's clear enough in every wheeze.
"See? Anything?"
Sam's voice is impossibly small. He looks. Sam worked hard for this, with very nearly the last of his breath, so Castiel looks, twists his head to the right and to the left, looks up at the ruined ceiling and the floorboard poking through the ceiling above, scans the floor around Sam and towards the far wall. There's nothing.
No, he says finally. I'm sorry. Perhaps if you rest, you will be able to stack more of the crates together and...
Need you to find Dean, Sam interrupts. Wouldn't leave you anyway. So don't.
Nothing will be gained by your staying here, Sam.
You were the one telling me not to risk it, Sam reminds him.
Things have changed, Castiel replies. Though what it is that's changed, he doesn't really know. They were stuck then, they're stuck now. Maybe it's just Sam's breathing. Before, it had been troubling. Now it's dire, and Sam's face, even in the gloom, has gone from red to pale. He looks anxious, but like he's doing his best to quell the panic brought on by too little air in his lungs. It's the Winchester in him, Castiel knows. Stubborn to a fault, just like Dean. It's a good thing, he supposes. Bobby had said to keep him calm, thereby implying that Sam will continue to breathe so long as he doesn't further complicate his situation through panic.
Sam sits up, rubs his chest as though willing his airways to open up, even if only some. He pulls the cell phone from his jacket before shrugging it off. He doesn't have to say that the added weight hinders his ability to draw breath. Castiel can see it.
I can't get out, Sam says as he turns on the phone. Not right now.
His voice is still high and tight and strained. Castiel supposes that he's going to call Bobby and Rufus to update them on their situation. He feels a sharp pang when Sam speaks and he realizes that he's dialed Dean's number.
Still looking for you, jerk.
Sam wheezes.
Cass and me, we're in Brunswick. Kinda stuck at the moment. We could really use your help, man. Call me, okay?
Sam shuts off the phone and bows his head against it.
Please call me.
Sam begins to cough. It brings color back into his face, turning it once again to an alarming shade of red, and Castiel would maybe think that it's a good thing were it not for how desperately Sam tries to breathe between every third or fourth hacking spasm. It isn't surprising when he lurches to his one good knee with his right leg stretched out at what surely must be a painful angle, and hunches over to vomit. Castiel worries about aspiration, is suddenly stricken and terrified of the thought of Sam breathing in his own emesis and dying while he sits, leaden and useless. It's what happens. He can tell the moment that Sam sucks in a breath out of reflex while he's still gagging, and then he's more or less on all fours, lurching and back-arching obscenely as he tries to clear his already strained lungs. Castiel can do nothing, and it's the most frustrating thing that he's ever known.
Breathe, he orders, because he can do nothing else. Breathe, Sam.
Sam raises one hand and flaps it in his general direction, like he might be trying to wave him off or beckon him closer. Or, given that he's lived in Dean's pockets for most of his life, he could just be failing to flash him a rude gesture with his fingers. Any are likely, and Castiel can only fall back on the hope that if he's still moving, that it must be a good thing. Then he rises, draws in three tremulous, painful, tight wheezes, and Castiel can see that his lips are a pale line in his red face.
Sam,
he says forlornly. He doesn't know what he expects, but it isn't for the larger man to drag himself forward between the V of his legs and collapse with his head in Castiel's lap. It's a self-comforting behavior, probably harkens back to his childhood, where he surely must have rested against his father or Dean, struggling for breath while they calmed and soothed him. Rubbed his back, held his inhaler to his lips, Castiel doesn't know. He can only imagine, and he can do none of it. He is already straining on his hands, can feel the sinews in his arms burn as if made of hot wire. If he moves them, he will fall. All he can do is let Sam rest his head upon his thighs and breathe for him. He wills Sam to feel and hear the rise and fall of his leaden breast. "Feel me breathe," Castiel tells him, raising his voice over the sound of Sam still coughing and struggling to move air in his lungs. "Feel it and listen to it. Listen to me breathe and try to breathe with me, Sam."
Coughing, Sam hacks out.
"It will pass," he assures him. "It will pass and you will breathe with me." It's nothing short of a command, and Sam rolls up his eyes to stare at him. He twists somewhat, still coughing, and lies back so that he can look up at him. It takes a small, agonizing eternity for him to stop coughing, and Castiel wonders belatedly if he shouldn't have had Sam try to sit up. It doesn't matter now. The coughing eases, and Sam's left shaking and wheezing terribly, with tears from the strain squeezing from the corners of his eyes. His lips are still pale, his cheeks a dusky wan hue. But he's breathing, and he hasn't given up. Not yet. How long they are like that, Castiel does not know. Sam lies back against him, and Castiel, so heavy that it feels as though the earth itself is trying to pull him through the mantle, stares down at him while Sam looks up. More passes between them than Sam's struggle to breathe, and his attempt to match his aching, tiny-sounding wheezes to the rise and fall of Castiel's chest. The whole of their history rises up without the necessity of words, and he longs to touch Sam. Not for anything so altruistic as comfort, or even with any sexual intent. It's just suddenly vital that he put his fingers to his skin, suddenly the most important thing in all of his long years that he remember the shape of Sam's jaw beneath his fingers, that he feel the softness of his lips, the sharp angles and corded muscle of him, the delicate places, the rough and the newly ruined. It's as if he must relearn everything he knows he's incapable of forgetting, and it feels like punishment that he can't, that he can only sit, stare down into Sam's ever-changing eyes, and watch the breath go out of him. When the wheezing stops, Castiel thinks he smells rain. Sam's lips have gone blue, and his chest only moves now in small increments. Castiel is too familiar with the workings of the human body to be duped into thinking that the absence of struggling signifies an improvement. Sam is now moving so little air that he can no longer wheeze. He's going to die. He is dying, and the only thing Castiel can cling to is the sharply terrifying thing that Sam had said to him earlier. "It's not like Lucifer's gonna let me stay that way." Sam's death will bring Lucifer's agents, if not Lucifer himself. He'll know where Sam is the moment that his heart stops, and Castiel doesn't think that anything will be improved by this. He needs to pray to his father that Sam will be left in peace, but he fears there will be no peace for him. Heaven is no more safe for him than Earth, maybe less so. There is nowhere that Sam can go that he won't be hunted or used as a bargaining chip. And so he does the only thing that he can. He prays for his father to have mercy on Sam, not because he deserves it, not because he's been through so much, but because Castiel feels for him what he supposes might be love or something close to it. It's no less than his deep, albeit frustrating, affection for Dean, but it's sharpened by physical memory, by the softness of Sam's lips and the realization that being tangled up in him was one of the few good, pure moments that he's had since he strode into hell to fetch some stranger who somehow managed to change the entire course of his history, his future, and everything that ever will be again. Sam's lips are moving. His eyes have gone impossibly dark, but perhaps it's just the gloom. He doesn't have enough air to speak, and Castiel wills him not to try. He doesn't need to hear whatever parting words Sam might have to say. He knows. When his lips form words, there is no sound, but Castiel understands him anyway, can read the shape of the words on his lips. Don't stop looking for him. Typical and heartbreaking, Castiel feels like he would weep if he felt himself capable of it. He would nod if it weren't already such a struggle to hold his head up. He only smiles and feels every last year of his existence weighing down upon him as gravity is, as the trap is, as Sam is. "I won't," he tells Sam. "You know I won't." Sam's lips quirk in something that might be a smile if it weren't so ghastly. "Thank you." It could be for anything. For Dean, for giving him reasons to continue to struggle against the destiny God so long ago gave him. Perhaps it's simply for being his friend. Castiel doesn't know. He watches Sam's chest slow and then still. He sees the light go out of his eyes and feels a momentary brush of something against his cheek. Castiel cannot even close Sam's eyes. He can only stare down at him and wonder how long it will be before his body grows cold. It takes less time than he would have thought. After the crash, Sam struggled to move him, and the desperate pitch of his labored breathing, it seems suddenly very quiet. Outside, Castiel supposes that birds are still singing, and that the wind is moving the weeds and the blooms on Muriel's tree. He cannot hear any of it. Cannot hear anything other than his own breathing, which sounds to him now like an insult to the man lying dead in his lap. He does not need to see to know that the sun drops lower in the horizon, that the moon that rises is wholly dark in the sky. Night comes, and there is no light now but the steady glow of Sam's forgotten flashlight shining against the corner of the room. It doesn't matter. His failing grace has not affected his vision, and he can still see Sam's face perfectly. The slight parting of his cold lips, the sticky shine of his drying eyes. When Sam's phone rings, Castiel feels like screaming. It's still in Sam's hand, though his fingers are lax and no longer capable of clutching at it. He stretches his neck, ignores the burn and rip of muscle as he strains to stare down at the phone. It says one thing. D. It makes Castiel's eyes prickle and burn suddenly, makes a sound well up in his throat, and he thinks for several moments that he really is going to scream. He doesn't know what he'll tell Dean if he should find them like this. He doesn't know how to explain that he failed in the one task that Dean holds most dear. Watch over Sam. I'm hoping Lucifer will resurrect him. Seems like the wrong excuse to make, even if he suspects that it's something Dean might understand, might even support, much as they all firmly believe that the best place for Lucifer is as far from Sam's body and soul as it's possible to get. The phone stops ringing, and the face of the phone changes to that of an envelope periodically turning itself inside and out. One new message. It stays that way for 10 seconds, and then goes dark. I'm sorry. Castiel's grace is chained, and he cannot make Dean hear him, cannot call out to Muriel or anyone else for help. But he says it again anyway. I'm sorry. The night continues on. Sam's phone rings 3 more times. Twice it's Dean, once it's Bobby. It's silent after that, and Castiel doesn't know if the phone has lost power, or they've simply forsaken calling in favor of driving. He can feel the drag of the moon across the sky, can feel that it's directly overhead, shining no light down upon him and Sam as they remain still in the cooling room that may become Sam's tomb. The absence of light feels right. Feels like an allegory for the darkness creeping inside of Castiel, beneath his borrowed skin and twining around the shuddering light of his waning grace. It shouldn't be so. Even if he himself is barred from heaven, he shouldn't feel that Sam is eternally out of his reach. But he does, and he is left as dark and as empty as the moon's missing light. Such poetry, little brother. There is no obvious change at first. No sound, no thickening shadows, nothing to see or smell or taste. It's just an almost sensual tickling along the ridge of Castiel's wings, and a growing weight in his heart that might be dread, might be hope. There comes an audible sigh and the feel of his hair being moved by warm breath that carries the smell of blood tinged with sulfur. "I wondered if you'd come yourself," Castiel whispers. "How could I not? It was either lay hands on his soul or his body, and as heaven's gates are still locked to me, well, here I am. You look forlorn, little brother." Castiel does not raise his head to look at him. The effort is too much, both to his chained body and his pride, perhaps even to what passes for his angel's heart.
"You'll bring him back, then?"
"Oh, I will. You know that I will. I need him. Looks like I'm not the only one." Castiel has nothing to say to that, and so he sits quietly, staring down at Sam's sightless, glazed eyes, as Lucifer finally comes around with one stroke of his vessel's finger against Castiel's cheek. He squats next to Castiel's hip and looks down at Sam with an expression so sad that it very nearly looks genuine. He knows Lucifer has no love for man, but he looks at Sam with nothing more than love and a very real-seeming rendering of pain.
"It's not fair, is it?"
Lucifer asks, smoothing Sam's hair back from his brow. "What God asks of them?"
"You're the one asking," Castiel reminds him.
"And who decided that we were banned from this plane without the approval of man? I didn't. I'd have been content to stride across the earth in my true form and leave Sam in peace. Our father bound me to him, Castiel. And for all of his greatness, for all of his confusion and his rage and his strength, look at him. He's just a little boy who needed comfort at the end. I may be a lot of things, but I'm not pointlessly cruel." Castiel looks at Lucifer finally, takes in the ruination of his vessel's face, and wonders how much longer the body will be able to contain him. He's amazed that it's gone on so long. Amazed not at Lucifer's will, for he knows already how boundless it is, but at the determination of the flesh that's holding him in.
"How is any of this not pointless?"
"How can you still even ask?" Lucifer counters. "Angels have fallen for less than coupling with a human, Castiel. But you? I think you love him. I think you love them both, and that's surely nowhere in God's plans. How can you fall so far, be left with so little grace, and still ask me what my point in defying heaven is?"
"Because you want to end them," Castiel responds. "Sam, Dean, all of them. They mean nothing to you, nothing to heaven. They mean something to me. They mean something to our father."
Lucifer leans in until his nose is very nearly touching Castiel's. "He has a lousy way of showing it. I don't see him protecting Sam. I don't see him securing his place in heaven so that Michael cannot get to him. Sam will come back into this body screaming, Castiel.
and our Father doesn't do a thing to stop his suffering. Not in heaven, not on earth.
Castiel says nothing. It's true, and the faith he has that his Father must have some plan, must have some reason, falters when it comes to the Winchesters. It works on the splinter in his heart, in his faith, drives it a bit deeper. He doesn't have to tell Lucifer that it does. He already knows.
"This trap," Castiel says instead.
"Meant for a hawk," Lucifer tells him, "but not the sparrow that it caught. I had hoped to talk with Muriel, but she's been resistant."
"You want her to join you?"
"Of course," Lucifer says with a casual nod, still stroking Sam's hair as if he were his own child. It rubs Castiel wrong, and he wishes he would stop so that he didn't have to see his lesion-covered hands card through his hair in the exact fashion that Castiel had once done.
"Muriel and I were very close long ago. We both took such delight in this place before God put man upon the earth. We might again one day, if she can figure out her loyalties."
"I cannot tell you where her loyalties lie, but I do not think they will ever be with you."
"We'll see," Lucifer says with a shrug. "And your loyalties, have they changed?"
"No. If I need to be the last thing standing between you and Sam Winchester, so be it."
Lucifer just smiles.
"Oh, Castiel, you'll stand aside and let him come to me. I know you will. You love and believe in him too much, and when he decides to say yes, you'll do everything it takes to help him on his way."
Castiel doesn't bother to contradict him, doesn't even know if the words would be true. He just looks down at Sam and tries not to pay attention to Lucifer's hand upon his beautiful, still face.
"Please, just do it."
"Poor Castiel. I feel how much you ache at the loss of him. If I could, I'd give him to you forever."
He doesn't believe that it's true, and Castiel's grateful for it. He doesn't know what would change if it were the case, doesn't know how far he would go or what lines he would cross. He's already crossed so many on Sam and Dean's behalf. He wonders how many are left until his grace is gone completely, or until he's something worse, something twisted. Lucifer considers Sam for a long moment before touching him. He does not touch Sam's forehead or his chest, but instead runs his hands along Sam's ruined leg. He frowns and pulls. Sam's hip twists with a sickening, wet-sounding crack that makes Castiel want to close his eyes, but he doesn't. He watches because he must, because he owes it to Sam and Dean both to do so.
"You need to do a better job of looking after him,"
Lucifer says reproachfully, and Castiel thinks that he's going to right Sam's leg fully, restore it from its twisted, withered state. But he doesn't. Does no more than what he's already done.
"It suits me," he says by way of explanation. "Either it will make Sam grow weary of struggling every day against the inevitable, or it'll push Dean to submit."
"If Dean were going to say yes to spare Sam any further pain, he'd have done it already,"
Castiel tells him. Lucifer smiles again.
"It's hard to watch what you love suffer, Castiel. You've learned this today already. Dean struggles with it daily. And if he says yes, Sam will too."
"How do you know?"
"It's what I would do."
And with that, Lucifer puts his palm against Sam's forehead. He was right. Sam comes back to his body screaming. The constriction in his lungs is no longer evident, and it's a full-bodied scream powered by all of the breath he can muster.
"Behold heaven's tender mercies,"
Lucifer says over the din of Sam's torment. He stands and looks down at them both.
"I give you charge of him, Castiel. Look out for him. Protect him."
Lucifer extends his hands and all of the sigils on the wall blaze hotly. The resulting light is blinding, but Castiel does not avert his eyes. He can do nothing as Sam screams and clutches at him as if he's trying to crawl inside of him. The devil is nothing more than shadow, a stark relief against the white-hot light of the burning sigils. The shape of his head nods towards Castiel. Do your duty, little sparrow. By my command, or the will of God if you prefer, do your duty and protect him. When the light burns out, Lucifer is gone and Castiel sags. He feels impossibly light, weightless, as if he could soar right now far from earth and heaven, far from Sam, who has wrapped his arms around him and is still screaming from whatever was done to him in heaven. He doesn't. He puts his hands to Sam's head and lets him rest, lets him forget. When he trusts himself to stand, he does, taking Sam up with him. Castiel stares down at the floor for a moment and tries not to feel bitter disgust. The symbols that had protected the now burned-out sigils are etched into the floor, directly beneath where he had been sitting. He should have known. Castiel does not take him far. There is a moderate-sized town nestled between two highways, and he chooses a motel there. He does as Dean had taught him, uses the credit card he'd been given, signs himself under an alias, and moves Sam from where he'd left him on a bench in the parking lot to the bed in the room he'd been given. He undresses Sam, covers him in blankets, and then makes two phone calls. He calls Bobby first, because it's easier, because it will be brief. They are not far, less than 2 hours, and it seems strange to think that he and Sam had only been in the house for perhaps 8 hours. It feels like more time has passed. It feels as though the weight of 1,000 years is pressing down upon him, and Castiel is so tired that he almost feels the human inclination towards sleep. He doesn't. He calls Dean and is unsurprised to find him much closer. Muriel, he supposes. He's all right? Dean asks him. He's fine. He doesn't mention Sam dying or his suffering in heaven. Figures that there'll be enough time for that later. He'll want to know where you've been. Fucking Muriel, Dean growls over the phone. She whisked me off the fucking map. Me and my baby both, and spent the last fucking week monologuing. Blah, 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 angels, Lucifer, the fucking apocalypse, and hey, great, she wanted to make sure that I knew it was all my fault, because I suck, and I'm a monster that should have stayed in hell. She said that repeatedly. But she did not injure you. Yes, she injured me. She bored me to the point of physical fucking pain, and hurt my feelings by calling me names. Dean. No, Cass. I'm fine, Cass. I'll be there in an hour, Cass. There's more to it, more than what Dean's telling him, and if he knows Muriel at all, he suspects that she was very thorough in her examination of his worth. She must have found something in him that convinced her to let him go, something that swayed her into believing that he didn't deserve to die or to be dragged, no doubt kicking and screaming, all the way back to hell. He suspects Dean will never speak of it and doesn't know if he'll ever see Muriel again to have it from her, so he lets it go. We will be here, waiting, Castiel tells him. Okay, seriously. Sam's okay? Because his leg, you know, and he sounded like crap when he called. Bobby said his asthma was acting up? Dust or something? He's fine, Castiel repeats. The attack passed. He is sleeping soundly and breathing well. Cass, Dean says over the phone, are you all right? He doesn't know what else to say, so he just answers truthfully. I am tired.
Huh. Dean says it like it's something that never had occurred to him before. Castiel does not fault him for it. Before today, he doesn't think that he's ever felt so tired.
Well, I guess, kick back or something?
I will.
Okay, I'll see you guys soon, I guess, and, Cass?
Thanks for looking out for Sam for me. Castiel stares at the phone for a long moment after Dean's hung up. He puts it on the nightstand next to the bed and feels an unwelcome burn in his gut at Dean's simple faith that he kept Sam safe from harm. It does nothing for the aching weariness that he feels down inside of his borrowed bones and his borrowed heart. It makes him feel as though some part of him is still weighed down, only this time with guilt and failure. The time is coming when he will be made to give up his search for his father. He feels the shape of the amulet in the pocket of his coat and wishes that it would just start to grow warm, that it would give some inkling of where God is, of what it is that Castiel is meant to do. It's still cold when he curls his hand around it, and he lets it go. Castiel removes his trench coat and his suit jacket and folds them carefully over the back of a nearby chair. He unlaces his shoes, takes them off, and places them neatly next to the bed. He doesn't remove his tie, just loosens it and, after a moment, does the only thing he knows to do. He lies back on the bed next to Sam. When he can stand to do it, he pulls back the blankets enough to finally look at Sam's withered right leg. Lucifer has corrected the painful angle of his hip and healed whatever new injuries he might have sustained, but nothing more. It's still a ropey mass of scars, still bulges at the knee and twists at the ankle so that Sam's foot is turned perpetually inward. He doesn't know if what's been healed will ease Sam's pain any. He doesn't think so. He thinks it's only rendered him somewhat more mobile, somewhat more able to turn and fight until Sam gives up and fights no more. It makes Castiel feel unbearably sad, and he covers the leg once again. Sam is still sleeping peacefully, all of the struggle of the day and the torment of heaven's ministrations gone from his face. There's not even a pinch of pain between his brows, and Castiel honestly doesn't know if he's to thank for that or if Lucifer is. He does what he'd wanted desperately to do before Sam died. He touches him, runs his fingers over the line of his jaw and the softness of his lips and cheeks. He traces the shape of his eyebrows before leaning in and pressing his lips gently to Sam's temple. Then he curls into him, places his hand so that he can feel the reassuring rise and fall of his chest. He's desperately exhausted and feels his grace fall back to the increasing demands of his vessel's body. He doesn't give in to it. He remains awake and alert, watches the door and the window and Sam, always Sam. Do your duty, little sparrow. Castiel listens to the sound of Sam's breathing and knows he'll do nothing but